Anya headed to the building she'd been brought to the previous night. Several villagers were out, all of them pausing to watch her before they went about various tasks. Children were seated on the benches, none of them playing this morning. Anya smelled something cooking. She couldn't tell what it was, but it smelled wonderful, and her stomach rumbled again to remind her she was famished. Thirsty, too. Anya peered inside the doorway, seeing the Brit hovering over the remaining gunman. He was on the same table she'd been put on yesterday, and she saw that the top of it was stained from the blood. The windows were open, letting in the scents of jungle flowers, whatever was cooking, and the almost overpowering odor of the moist loam. Light streamed in from all directions, giving the large room a much different appearance from her previous visit. At the end opposite from Doc and his patient was a slate board across part of the wall. Artfully rendered letters about 6 inches high stretched across it. It looked more like art than words. There was a globe on a stand next to the teacher's table, and there were other accoutrements any classroom would have. Rulers, mugs filled with pencils and paintbrushes, a skeleton hanging from a pole, plastic from the look of it, and jars filled with grass and insects. In addition to the student tables and benches, there were a few plastic chairs, like someone might find in a department store's garden department. There were also toys in the far corner, a dump truck, a Raggedy Ann doll, a few brightly colored pails and shovels, a faded basketball, and 3 Barbie dolls with badly shorn hair.
Doc?
He nodded, rubbed a cotton swab under the man's nose, and his eyelids fluttered, but the man had yet to regain consciousness. Anya came close and heard someone enter behind her. It was Somm and the woman she'd been talking to, hovering curiously just inside.
His name is Ba An Dung, according to the papers in his pocket. So definitely Vietnamese. From South Vietnam, maybe, if he is the second child.
I don't understand.
In the southern part of the country, the second-born son is given the name Ba, which means third, the third member of the family. But in the north, Ba is given to the third child. Ka goes to the oldest. Hai, the second. Just a bit of trivia for you. An Dung means peaceful hero, but I wager this fellow is neither peaceful nor a hero. I spent a year in Vietnam right after my wife died. She was Vietnamese. We'd always talked about going to visit her sisters. Just never got around to it while she was alive.
You're an interesting man, Doc.
Not near so interesting as you, Anya. An archaeologist, you said, and a TV personality. A treasure finder and the target of a Vietnamese army.
Well, I'd hardly consider them an army.
They had the firepower of one, eh? He's coming too. He definitely could benefit from a hospital. And your friend Lou should be checked out there as well, I suppose, or at least at a clinic. I dare say you're mending well enough on your own that you won't need one. I want none of you suing me now, because I'm not a real medical doctor. I did the best I could.
You did great, Doc. Really great.
Doc took several steps back from the table so as not to interfere with whatever she planned for the man. Anya leaned over him. He stared up at her, a snarl forming on his lips. Still, he made no move to menace her or to get up.
Ba An Dung, tell me all about the treasure in the mountain.
Anya asked him plenty of other questions. How many men were involved in the smuggling operation? What he thought the remainder might be doing now? Would any more be coming after her and her companions? Where did the gold come from, and where was it ultimately headed? He gave her nothing, just a string of curses and threats that were clearly intended to frighten her. The fingers of his good hand clenched and unclenched, and veins stood out along his neck and temples.
What about the skull bowl and the American dog tags?
This interested Doc, who took a step closer. She saw no spark of recognition on the man's face, and so she described the bowl, thinking perhaps he did not know it was made from a human skull. He didn't react, but he showed recognition when she mentioned the golden Buddhas, however. Anya pushed away from the table.
Nothing.
I'm not surprised. Violent men are not terribly cooperative. I know sodium thiopental, or sodium pentothal, truth serum, as it's called. Ethanol, scopolamine, a handful of barbiturates. to marzipan, some of those might work. They're all sedatives and block cognitive function and interfere with judgment. Don't have any of those either. As I said, I've used up just about everything on the lot of you. You could just beat it out of him, I suppose.
Or I could let the authorities deal with him. Definitely let the authorities deal with him.
Hungry, Anya?
Doc pointed to the doorway. A young teens man came in with a tray, with two bowls and a jar of water on it.
I've already eaten, fixed myself a double serving of instant oatmeal a little while ago. I have a nice stock of it. Cinnamon raisin. And it's one of the few things I don't share.
Doc gestured to the tray. The young man carried it to a desk and put it down, bowed, and stood against a wall.
Yes, I'm very hungry.
That's Jock in the bowls. It's a rice soup on the thick side. Sort of like porridge, sometimes with pork if they catch a wild pig. But it doesn't look like it this morning. Seems they did put an egg in it for you. That would cost you an extra 5 baht or so if you bought Jock in a marketplace. It's a bit like cow tom, if you've had that before. But it's spicier. See, they put shredded ginger in it just for you. Grown locally, and quite a treat, the ginger. You can have my bowl, too, if you'd like.
Anya sat and tipped the first bowl to her mouth. There were no spoons. The mixture was warm and not as spicy as she'd expected, and it was as thick as porridge. She found it pleasant and filling, and hoped Luar Taro would be served some when he woke up. The second bowl quickly followed the first. And she drank the water in one long pull. She could have eaten at least one more bowl, but she stopped herself from asking for more.
Thank you.
Doc translated for her. The young man smiled, bowed again, and retreated outside with the tray and empty bowls. Anya stared at the doorway. She remembered taking off her pack yesterday and setting it just inside. It wasn't there now.
Doc, my bag. I put it there, right there, yesterday.
I wouldn't know anything about that. I was paying all my attention to you and Lou and him.
Doc pointed to the Vietnamese man, who was trying unsuccessfully to get up.
His muscles won't be cooperating for a little while. The stuff I gave him is made to subdue an ox, don't you know?
My bag? Maybe one of the villagers moved it to clean it. You said they were washing my clothes. And my boots. Where are my boots?
Doc spoke to Som and the other woman, making a clacking sound with his tongue against his teeth. After a moment, he translated the reply.
Som's sister has washed what is left of your clothes, and they are drying on a tree. Your boots are there as well, soaking to get mud out. As for your pack, they did not touch it. Som thinks your other fellow...
Zakarat?
Yes, I remember him telling me his name last night. Zakarat Taksin. Som thinks Zakarat took your pack. A nice enough chap. I put a tight bandage on his ankle and told him he should have it x-rayed. Might be broken, don't you know? Had a hell of a time trying to put his boots on. Couldn't get the one over the swelling. And so he traded them to Anuman for a pair of good sandals.
Where is Zakarat?
He left last night. The rain's still coming down hard. Borrowed Erewhon's motorcycle and took off. Good thing the headlight was working. Don't know how far he managed to get, though, all the rain and the mud. The trails are basically streams. I hope he brings Erewhon's motorcycle back. It's the only one in the village.
My skull bowl.
Pardon?
Something very important to me was in that bag. Did she see which way Zakarat went?
There was another exchange in the teen's language.
Som said he went west, back into the jungle, the way the three of you had come.
Anya spun and dashed past the two women.
Lou! Trouble!
She raced to the small building, nearly bowling over a hunchbacked man who was trundling by with a bundle of soggy reeds.
Lou!
Luar Taro was still propped up against the wall, a thin line of drool spilling over his lower lip and ending in a half-dollar-size wet spot on his borrowed shirt.
Lou!
Anya knelt by him, gently jostling him.
Lou! Wake up! Enough tranquilizer to take out an ox, huh? Wonderful. Do you have my camera?
She patted the bulging pockets of his trousers, finding it on the second try by its boxy shape. She unsnapped the pocket and pulled it out.
Oh, thank God.
It was still in the plastic bag and looked dry. She patted at more of his pockets, finding his camera and some extra batteries, the latter of which she palmed. Her own borrowed clothes did not have pockets, so she would have to find some sort of pack or bag. She'd ask Doc if she could borrow something, and maybe get someone to pack her a lunch, too.
Lou.
She patted down all his pockets, though she couldn't say why she did this.
Damn it!
She discovered ancient gold coins and necklaces, one of which had a large sapphire dangling from it, and that she remembered had hung around the neck of a Buddha statue. She rocked back on her heels, replaced the treasures in his pockets, and snapped them closed.
Damn it, Lou. That's stealing. You're an archaeologist. A good one, I thought.
She shook her head, disappointed with this man she thought she might eventually fall in love with. When had he taken these things? A fortune. He was the last to climb the rope ladder out of the cavern, so he could have grabbed the treasures while she and Zakarat were climbing. She'd been so preoccupied with the skull bowl and the teak coffins that he could have conducted his little raid then, stuffed things in the pockets of his pants and jacket, and transferred them to his borrowed clothes while she was unconscious. So that's what Doc meant when he said the teens weren't interested in her celebrity or Lou's wealth. She felt a flush of anger rising in her face. But did she have a right to be upset? Anya stood and paced. The treasures had been stolen from somewhere, and certainly a good portion of them were being whisked away from the cavern now, if they hadn't already been carted off on the backs of the jeeps. Nuartaro had kept these few valuable pieces out of the thieves' hands, but this made him no better than the thieves.
Yet I took the skull bowl.
The line was so often blurred between good and evil, right and wrong. There'd been so much treasure. Maybe it was just too tempting to Nuartaro. It certainly had been too tempting for Zakarat. Maybe Nuartaro had never done such a thing before, snared antiquities for his personal gain. But she suddenly doubted that. He didn't seem at a loss for funds. Not when she'd met him, and not when he agreed to this vacation and exchanged a stack of his money for Thai baht at the airport.
Damn it, Lou.
She stood ramrod straight and stared down at him, finding it difficult to hold on to her ire.
I took the skull bowl.
And she meant to find Zakarat and get it back. But if she couldn't, at least she had the digital camera and the pictures and could download the shots. Cradling the camera and batteries to her chest, she spun and headed to the door.
Anya.
She stopped and looked over her shoulder. A groggy Nuartaro looked up at her. He made a move to rise, but gave up on it, like a drunk whose muscles wouldn't cooperate. She came back to him.
Anya, are you all right?
Fine. Mending, anyway.
You heal fast. You are remarkable, Anya. I've been so worried.
He started to doze again. She wanted to talk about the treasure he'd taken, but stayed silent on the matter.
Lou?
His eyes fluttered open, and a loopy grin splayed across his face. He might as well have been drunk for all the motor coordination he had. Another line of drool spilled down. She talked fast, wanting to get all the information out before he fell back asleep, and praying he could retain some of it. She explained about the two dead boys, about the one surviving gunman, and about Zakarat leaving last night on the motorcycle. As much as she wanted to go to the authorities right this very moment, her more immediate concern was Zakarat, and after that, the skull bowl.
I need to find the authorities after I find Zakarat. If I can find him. But maybe if you're feeling better, you could...
I'll get to a city. I would do that, Anya. And I will meet you back at our cabin.
Yes. Fine.
About that sword. I saw you with the sword again. On the side of the mountain. Before we crossed the river. It had blood on it. And you used it to cut through the vines. You obviously did not know I saw you with it. A beautiful old sword. European.
You're mistaken.
I saw it again when you killed one of the gunmen yesterday. It was yesterday, was it not? Things are blurry. A beautiful old sword. though not so beautiful as you, disappeared into thin air. I saw it. An invisible sword. A woman who heals amazingly fast and who carries an invisible sword. A magical woman.
Listen, Lou. Yes, there is magic in the world. I suppose you could call it that. I heal quickly. I'm blessed. There are just some things beyond the realm of normalcy. Yes, there is a sword. I can't explain it. Maybe later.
Some things defy explanation, beautiful Anya. Your secret, whatever it is, tell me later. I will keep it.
We've all seen things on digs that defy explanation. You have secrets. We all have secrets. You're safe, Lou. Zakarat isn't.
No. You go find Zakarat. My remarkable, beautiful Anya with the invisible sword. I think it will have me a little more sleep. Just a few more minutes. Then I will go to the city. Find the police. Tell them all about the machine guns. And the gold.
A little more sleep for you. And a lot more speed for me.
Anya hurried to find Doc, who loaned her a net sling bag for her camera, and told her the bag was just like a few Zakarat had borrowed the previous evening. Doc had securely tied the gunman to the table.
That foul man is not going anywhere, and if he wiggles too much, I've got two or three more doses of tranquilizer left that I can give him. He'll stay put until your friend Lou brings the authorities, whatever authorities police this part of Thailand. I've got some stuff to rouse Lou and get him moving. I've never run afoul of the law, Anya, so I don't know much about such things, getting the police and all, don't you know?
My boots, Doc. Do you know where they are?
Washed, I said. Where, I don't know. Sorry, I was taking care of my patients, not their belongings.
Thanks.
Anya raced down the path that she'd taken into the village. It wasn't difficult to find the motorcycle tracks. It obviously had been raining when Zakarat left, but it hadn't been raining quite enough to obliterate the wheel marks. The depressions were filled with water, but the edges of the tracks were drying under the warm sun. The tracks were narrow, hinting at an older dirt bike model rather than anything recent.
We will be known forever by the tracks we leave.
It was one of the Native American proverbs she'd committed to memory. Another favorite came to mind.
We do not inherit the land from our ancestors. We borrow it from our children.
The teens were taking good care of the land for their children, she thought, keeping it the same as they'd found it, perhaps keeping it nearly the same as it had been 1,000 years ago. Anya loved running, when she was running to something and not being chased. She could have run a little faster, perhaps, in her boots, though they were thick-soled and a tad clunky. The sandals slipped and were probably birthing blisters, but they were serving well enough, and she hadn't been willing to spend any more time in the village searching for her things. She drew the humid air deep into her lungs, finding the earthy scent of the ground and the myriad flowers almost intoxicating. It made her think of groggy Lou. Anya quickly brushed thoughts of him away, as she didn't need that distraction. The motorcycle, no matter how old, would have made better time than her running, and Zakarat had quite a head start on her. But the motorcycle couldn't have carried Zakarat across the river. She expected to find the bike ditched there. He would have swum across to the base of the mountain, climbed and searched for the cavern marked by the rare flower. And he might well be back in his own village by now, if he found the cavern quickly and managed to cart away enough relics to suit him. Or perhaps he was in the nearest city, selling whatever he had stolen. The trip could well be futile. She might not find him, but she had to give it a try, both to recover the skull bowl and to make certain Zakarat stayed safe and did not run afoul of any more smugglers. She guessed she'd passed about 2 miles when she noticed traces of the gunman who'd come this way yesterday. There was a crumpled cigarette pack and broken branches, and several deep boot prints that had filled with water. They were obvious signs, and she suspected she would have found more if she'd been actively looking. She could tell where the gunman had come upon the trail. The trail of Zakharat's borrowed bike kept going west, and so she continued to follow it. She came upon the motorcycle several miles later, just as the swollen river loomed in sight. It was a faded red Bridgestone 65cc two-cycle dirt bike, vintage from the 1960s, and with very little rust. It was canted on its side in a swath of mud, clumps of earth drying on the tires, and the front fender was dented. The bike had been clumsily discarded, and she would have to return it to the Tin's village later. Anya scowled. Zakharat was not taking care of the earth for his children, and he was not leaving the best tracks in his wake in this world. There was no waiting this time. She had to swim. She took off her sandals and stuffed them inside her shirt to keep them from being washed away. She wanted to take her camera with her. Wrapping the plastic tighter around it, and then twisting the net bag around that, she held it in one hand and swam with her arm out of the water. It was awkward, but she managed. The current was strong and pushed her downriver, and so she emerged quite some distance from the motorcycle. Her arms and legs ached from the river's buffeting, and she felt as if she'd been 10 rounds in the ring by the time she emerged several minutes later, the sun directly overhead to signal noon. Anya found Zakharat on the rise just past the opposite bank, on a narrow game trail leading up the mountain. He'd been dead for at least a few hours, she could tell with a practiced glance, his legs riddled with bullets and a knife stuck in the middle of his chest. It was an older military knife, the leather-wrapped handle cracked from age and stained with oil. Anya stared at it, anger and sadness welling up.
A senseless death.
She said a silent prayer and allowed herself only a few moments to grieve for Zakharat and wonder how to find his family and deliver the news. The lodge, she decided, from which he gave tours would be a good place to start. Someone there would know how to contact his wife. She tugged off his shirt, tried futilely to shoo away the flies with it, and laid it across his chest and face. The pockets of it had been ripped, as had his pants pockets. The pieces of jewelry that he'd looped around his neck and stuck on his fingers were gone, too. It looked as if a few of his fingers had been broken in the process of recovering some of the pieces. So the thieves took back their gains and left Zakharat's body to rot. He'd had no weapons. They could have regained the gold without killing him. He was no threat, save for knowing the location of their treasure cavern. 3 empty net bags were strewn a few yards away. What Zakharat had intended to put more treasure in. She didn't see the pack she'd put the skull bowl in, and that he'd supposedly taken. So the thieves had probably grabbed that too. She searched for it, though, combing through ferns and looking along the riverbank before finally giving up, and deciding to pursue the men who'd killed Zakharat. Anya would have gone after them regardless of whether they'd left behind the bowl. Partly a need for revenge, she recognized, but it was more of a need to stop them from killing anyone else who might chance to get in their way. She took a last look at Zakharat's corpse, trying to memorize its location so she could direct the authorities to it. To help, she took one of his net bags and tied it to a tree branch that overhung his body. Then she started up the mountainside, her feet slipping in the sandals and occasionally getting stuck in pockets of mud. The tracks the men left were easy to follow. Their heavy boot prints were distinct despite all the rain, and they'd been careless with the foliage, breaking branches and smashing flowering plants in their wake. Even someone without tracking skills could have followed the path they made. She hoped Luar Taro had recovered enough to go in search of the appropriate authorities, that he could either accompany them or give them good enough directions, and that they might be on their way there soon. Her feet pressed spent bullet shells into the ground as she climbed. She found the whole thing odd. A gun, the one she'd taken from one of the men and briefly used, was decades old, and an old-style military knife had been used on Zakharat. She'd thought that men with so much treasure could have afforded more modern and expensive weapons. Perhaps they just favored things from the past. Her mind touched the sword. She neither heard nor saw evidence of the men being nearby, and therefore she had no immediate need for a weapon. but the sword's pommel felt good against her palm, and she wrapped her fingers tight around it as she drew her lips into a thin line.
I might not have found the cavern again on my own, at least not without quite a bit of searching. But you vile men are showing me the way. Might as well have put up a road sign, as clumsy as you idiots are. Please still be there.
Anya very much wanted to confront them, and despite her distaste of violence, she planned to make them pay. She climbed slower than she would have liked, but she was still fatigued from yesterday's rigorous ordeal. The stitches in her leg from where the retired veterinarian had cut out the bullets pulled. She had been climbing for about an hour when she spotted the roof of a truck in a gap in the branches of a pair of acacia trees. The men had not left. In fact, they'd managed to bring a truck up the narrow trail. They probably needed it, because the jeeps they'd had yesterday were not sufficient to haul away all of the treasure. She edged closer, staying low so she could get a good look at what was going on. The truck seemed to have more rust showing than paint, and it had a high, boxy back. Its tires were thick and mud-encrusted, and from the height of the axles, it looked like a four-wheel drive setup, no doubt necessary in this terrain. The truck was narrow, but barely fit on the overgrown trail, and it appeared to be a Howo design. Anya had seen several trucks made by the company during a trip to China. This model had quite some age to it, and she suspected it would haul a good bit of the treasure. There was a jeep, too, several yards behind the truck and lower on the trail. No one was in either vehicle. She waited, resting the sword flat against the ground and resisting the urge to brush away the gnats that were dancing around her face. Two black-clad men passed by her hiding spot and loaded a crate onto the back of the truck, struggling under its weight. The men she'd seen yesterday had also been dressed in black. They weren't wearing uniforms, however, as it didn't look as if any of the shirts and pants matched. The shoes ranged from tennis shoes to heavy boots to loafers on the third man who appeared, all caked with mud. She watched for several more minutes, trying to gauge just how many men were involved. She only saw the three, but that didn't mean there weren't more in the cavern helping to bring up the goods. She smelled something acrid. They were using a gas-powered winch. She shifted her position and saw that they'd brought a cumbersome contraption to replace the broken one she'd spotted yesterday. It belched a small cloud of exhaust. So there was at least one more man down below attaching things to the cable. Had they been loading treasure all night? Had the torrential rain slowed them? How much had already been carted away? Anya would find out soon enough, and she would try to keep them from taking any more. She left her camera in the bushes and crept toward the jeep, crouching low and hunkering behind it. She carefully thrust the tip of her sword between the threads of the right rear tire. The rubber was thick, and it took some worrying at it, but she finally pierced it. She made two more holes in it and stretched her hand forward, feeling the air slowly escaping. Then she worked on the other rear tire. The truck would not be able to easily get around the jeep without pushing it out of the way, and the jeep could not get far on only its front tires. For good measure, she punctured the spare that was affixed to the back. She heard one of them strike a match as another continued talking. Her eyes widened when she picked up the words Chiang Mai. Peeking around the rear of the jeep, she caught a good profile of one of the men. He was short, no more than 5'5", and he stood straight, shoulders back in seeming military posture. He brought his head forward when he sucked on his cigarette. She memorized his face. She couldn't get a good look at the other two. They kept their heads down, and they wore caps, one with an extra long brim. The one farthest away turned and walked out of sight. She shifted her position and watched him climb down into the treasure cavern. Like a shadow, she slipped around the other side of the jeep, edging to its front and poking her head up only briefly to see that the two men were still standing and talking at the back of the truck. It was half filled with crates, and she saw the dark outline of a Buddha statue. Likely they hadn't cleaned out the entire cavern before now because there'd simply been too many relics in it. Hauling away that much stuff required time and multiple vehicles and no doubt multiple trips. The men were taking care with the goods and not hurrying. She calculated how to take the pair out without killing them. She didn't need their deaths to meet her revenge. She just needed to catch them. A part of her knew this was something the Thai authorities should handle, but they weren't here, and she worried that the men might not tarry long enough for the authorities to arrive. Though her stopping the jeep would help that matter, stopping the truck would cement the deal. Anya weighed the options and decided the authorities could deal with her prisoners. She would explain that the smuggling operation was being packed up and moved because she, Luar Taro, and Zakarat accidentally stumbled across it, and so she had to act. She crept closer and tightened her grip on her sword. The shorter man dropped his cigarette and ground it out with the ball of his foot. He was looking down, studying a turtle that had crawled out of the tall grass, and Anya chose that moment to strike. The shorter man looked up just as Anya wrapped the pommel of her sword against the back of the other man's head. He crumpled just as the shorter man drew the pistol from a holster at his side and brought it up. She closed the distance and brought the pommel down like a hammer on his hand. The gun dropped. He fumbled for a knife at his waist and tried to back away from her, but the ground was still damp and he lost his balance. She brought her leg up and caught him hard in the thigh. Then kicked him a second time. As he dropped to his knees, she thumped the pommel against the top of his head, praying she'd only knocked him out. No time to check. She vaulted over his body and whipped around the side of the truck, feet churning over the ground and heading toward the hole the winch sat in front of. A man was emerging from it, awkward in his climbing because he had a gun in his hand. The wild shot struck a front tire of the truck. Anya smiled at that.
Yeah. Now shoot out the other one.
She charged him. He managed to climb all the way out by the time she reached him, and he squeezed off two more shots. One grazed her arm. It felt like fire, and she ground her teeth together. She swept the sword around, turning it so the flat of her blade would hit his side. He was too fast for her. He leaped backward across the hole, hollering to whoever was still inside.
I definitely need to learn Vietnamese.
Yeah.
She skirted the hole. The shots were fired upward through it from a machine gun. Then she whirled as the man up top fired again, this time at least one of the bullets striking the blade of the sword.
No!
She darted toward him, spinning, making herself a difficult target. This time, she let the edge of the blade cut through the air, cleaving the distance between her and the gunman. The blade bit into his arm, and he dropped the pistol. Then she brought the sword around again, striking his arm a second time. She stepped to the side so she could keep an eye on the hole and the rope ladder.
Down!
The injured man bent forward, cradling his sliced arm, blood flowing over his hand.
I said, down!
She gestured with her free hand, and he got the idea, gingerly getting to his knees. The rope ladder moved. Anya clocked the wounded man on the side of his head with an elbow to knock him out. Moving fast, she dismissed the sword so she could have both hands free and ran back to the hole. She pulled at the ladder, ducking back just as more bullets came from below. Someone was climbing up it, but they backed off. She yanked the ladder up, stranding them.
Yeah. You can stay down there!
Anya doubted they could leave the cavern via the way she'd come into it yesterday. All the rain would have thoroughly flooded the passageways, and there hadn't been time for the water to recede. She knelt and tried to get a good look into the cavern.
Trapped like the rats you more than certainly are.
An idea formed in her head. She could use the rope from the ladder to tie up the three unconscious men. Then she would wait for whatever authorities would be arriving. She'd use one of the dropped pistols if necessary to keep the men in the cavern under control.
Oh, Luar Taro. I hope you've contacted someone by now. I don't want to sit up here all day. I hope...
Anya Creed! Put your hands to your sides and stand up.
Anya glanced over her shoulder, seeing another black-clad man holding a machine gun on her. He must have been in the back of the truck, hidden by the shadows, or maybe off to the side of the trail, attending to something personal. Vietnamese or Laotian, Anya placed him in his early 40s. He had a cruel look about him, with fleshy, pockmarked cheeks, as if he'd suffered a disease in earlier years. He had intense, unblinking eyes that were hard like river stones. There was only a hint of stubble on his face, and his hair was short and styled, though it was greasy from not being washed recently. Perhaps he was a businessman who worked in an office when he wasn't smuggling. Like the others, he wore dark clothes, but his were green, so deep that at a distance they appeared black. His shoes looked expensive. Her lost backpack was slung over his shoulder. She pointed at the bag.
You took that from Zakarat.
I only took back what is mine. I assure you that I am a good shot, Anya Creed. And if you do not surrender now, I will kill you.
Anya had no choice but to comply.
You wonder how I know your name.
No, I do not wonder. You tortured Zakarat. He gave you my name.
Zakarat Taksin did not deal well with pain. He called you Anya Creed, a name that meant nothing to me until he said you and your companion, Luardo, were archaeologists who wanted to explore some caves. He had a handful of bat in his pocket that you'd given him. He said you wanted to bring a film crew back with you later and put the caves on television. I deduce that you must be the Anya Creed, the famous archaeologist who chases history's monsters. Even in my country, your silly, worthless program airs.
And what country is that?
Actually, I have two, America and Vietnam. Educated in the first, I have embraced the latter. Vietnam is home now. I have no use for Americans. Is Luardo with you, hiding in the bushes? Come out, Luardo, or I will kill Anya Creed.
And you are?
My name is of no consequence to someone who will die soon, and who will die forever and never find heaven or hell. The old one taught me how to capture souls. I will kill you, Anya Creed, and I will cause your soul to rot for eternity.
Then kill me, you thief. Kill me and be done with this. Come on, get it over with.
I have no reason to hate you, so quickly, yes, I will kill you. And likely without too much pain. Not as much pain as Zakarat felt, I can assure you. Quickly, if you will cooperate first.
Cooperate? And if I don't?
Then your death will be agonizing. And very, very slow. The manner of your demise matters not to me, Anya Creed. Your slow death would amuse me.
Cooperate, so I can more quickly rot for eternity.
Yes, cooperate, the famous Anya Creed. Perhaps I will only let your soul rot for a decade or two.
Anya took a step back, her heel bumping up against one of the stakes that held the rope ladder.
I want to know where you went, Anya Creed, after you left my trove and ran down the mountain yesterday. Where did you go? And who did you tell about my acquisitions? And where is Luardo?
He is where you won't find him.
Oh, I am a resourceful man.
Resourceful enough to stash your ill-gotten wealth in a mountain. And resourceful enough to get some vehicles here fast to retrieve it. Since you intend to kill me anyway, why not tell me what this is all about? Where did all of the gold come from?
And where is it going?
Yes.
I told you I was educated in America. I grew up on James Bond films. All the villains reveal their plans, lording it over James Bond, who was trussed up to some torture device. He always escaped.
You worry that I'll escape? You've got a gun on me.
I am not a James Bond villain. I am not a villain at all. Just a businessman, an opportunist, who made fortunate alliances so he could make a fortune. I do not need to explain my plans to an archaeologist who stars in a silly television program, and no, I do not worry that you will escape. Now tell me, Anya Creed, where did you go yesterday? Who did you talk to? And where is Luardo?
He's beyond your reach.
Anya took another step back and dropped into the opening. Bullet sprayed the air where she'd stood a moment ago. The impact on her sandaled feet was jarring, as if she'd jammed her heels against red-hot thumbtacks. She clamped her mouth shut to keep from crying out. She whirled, sword leading, and sliced into a man who'd been darting forward, pistol raised. The flat of the blade hit his hand, sending the gun careering off a crate.
Drop it.
Anya turned to a second man she'd spotted. She leaped out from under the opening in the ceiling, worried that she'd be as good as a sitting duck for the man up top. The second man reluctantly lowered his machine gun, his gaze darting between her and his companion. Anya edged farther into the chamber, all the while keeping her eyes on the two men. They stank so strongly of sweat and cigarettes that she nearly gagged. The light was better than on her previous visit. A tall, battery-operated lamp was responsible, casting a fluorescent glow everywhere and making the beads of sweat on the men's faces glisten.
Drop it now! Drop the machine gun now!
The younger of the two men made a move to do just that, but it was a feint. He instead raised his machine gun. The bullets missed Anya by inches, but only because she'd sprung toward the pool in the center.
Idiot.
She circled around behind him, quick as a cat. A second slash ended his scream and sent the other man to his knees, arms up in surrender.
Anya Creed! Show yourself!
So you can shoot me?
God damn you! Where is Luardo? Who have you told about this place?
He shuffled around the opening, poking his head down, but he was unable to see her because Anya had moved behind a stack of crates.
I'll let you live if you cooperate, Anya Creed. I'll lower this ladder and you can climb out.
You think I believe that? You probably have a bridge somewhere you want to sell me to.
The man who'd surrendered shuffled on his knees toward the opening.
Sip! Dip kind of hiding!
She guessed that he'd asked his boss to be let up.
Shut up. And stay put!
He seemed not to understand her.
Go die!
Anya slipped out from behind the crate and reached for the dropped machine gun.
You might not understand my language, but you understand this well enough.
She swung the machine gun to the left as a gesture that he should move away from the opening. He shook his head, spittle flying from his lips and his eyes wide with uncertainty. She gestured again. Finally, he complied, though he kept looking up.
Anya Creed, I could torture the information out of you, but torture is rather messy. Why not just tell me who you talk to? This is your last warning. I don't need to shoot you. You can starve down there. You can die of exposure at night when the temperature drops. No one comes up to this part of the mountain. No one will find you. Just tell me what I want to know.
God damn you, you obstinate bitch!
The man who'd surrendered was cut by rock fragments. He scuttled farther away from the opening.
The jeep. He's starting the jeep.
But why not leave in the truck? It was filled with crates of treasure. Maybe he was just moving the jeep to make things easier.
Unless he doesn't have the keys to the truck and doesn't know how to hotwire it.
She looked to the surrendered man and the body of the man she'd killed. On the latter's belt was a clip with several keys.
Your boss isn't going to get far in that jeep.
Anya pointed the muzzle at her captive, then at a crate, and then to a spot beneath the opening.
Move!
He looked puzzled for only an instant, and then he clambered to his feet and stepped around the body of his dead companion, eyes lingering on the blood.
Move! Hurry!
If he didn't understand the words, he understood her intent. The crate was roughly a meter cubed. He strained to push it under the opening. He looked to the dozen crates remaining and picked a smaller one to set on top. He had a hard time lifting the crate and looked to her for help. She shook her head.
I'm not dropping the gun. Try again. You can do it.
While he struggled with it, she bent and retrieved the keys from the dead man's belt and then patted his pockets, pulling out a few business cards and a folded piece of paper. She stuck these inside her shirt, intending to look at them later when she was out of here. His other pocket was empty. The man arranged the second crate so it would serve as a ladder. Anya gestured for him to step back.
What to do with you? What to do? If I let you go up first, you might try to kick me or do something else to cause problems. You might holler and bring your boss back. If I go first, you might grab my leg.
Anya slipped close to him and lifted the gun. He closed his eyes and gritted his teeth. Anya didn't want to kill another one of them. She wanted them alive for the authorities to question. Eyes flitting around the chamber, she spotted a length of rope around a crate. She dropped the machine gun and unfastened the rope and then used a length of it to tie up her prisoner. She checked his pockets, finding no ID, but pulling out a few business cards and a pack of cigarettes. The latter she dropped with disgust. Spotting the pistol, she snapped it up and thrust it in her waistband.
Can't afford to leave you a weapon.
Then she struggled to prop him up against a wall near the lamp and took a moment to examine the head wound she'd given him. His chest rose and fell regularly.
I think you'll be all right. Fit enough to serve a prison sentence.
A last look around the chamber and a moment more to disable the machine gun. Then she started toward the coffins, wanting to see if the pottery was still inside them. Instead, she changed her mind and climbed up the crates.
Yeah. Yeah.
Her legs ached, the right one still sore from where Doc had removed the bullets. She felt the stitches pull. She pulled herself halfway out of the hole and grabbed at the rope ladder bunched up at the top.
Huh. Lovely.
The man who'd taken off in the Jeep had returned on foot, his machine gun again pointed at her. He didn't bother to ask questions this time. She dipped her head below the rim, feeling the bits of earth and rock pelt the top of her head. One end of the rope ladder came loose, shot through. Anya hung on the other side as it swayed precariously. When the firing stopped, Anya didn't hesitate. She lifted herself over the lip and rolled toward him. He was just about to jam in another magazine. She put her head down and barreled into him. Anya punched him in the face. Blood spurted from his nose. With her knees on his chest, Anya drew the pistol out of her waistband and shoved the barrel under his chin. He made a move to shove her off. She clocked him again and pushed the gun against his throat.
You're the one who needs to cooperate now, if you want to live. Tell me what this is about. The treasure? The trucks? I said talk.
Anya dug her knee into his side, inadvertently cracking at least one of his ribs, and pushed the gun against him with more force. She eased up only a little so he could speak.
You are more than a television archaeologist, it seems.
Talk!
I am only a part of this, Anya Creed. A sizable part, yes, but only a part. You have cut the tail off the snake, not its head.
Anya jabbed him in the throat with the gun again.
The skull bowl. Tell me about that.
He shook his head and grinned wider.
Damn it.
Anya pushed herself off him, further injuring his ribs. She waved the gun at him, but he made no move to get up. Bending over him, gun still threatening, she tugged a pistol from a holster at his side. It arced out of sight down the slope. Next, she rifled through his pockets. No wallet, no ID, nothing.
Who are you?
He kept smiling, blood from his broken nose spilling over his lip. She fumed and dug the ball of her foot into the ground. Had Luartaro reached the authorities? Were they on their way? Should she wait for them?
No, I can't wait.
Anya gestured with the pistol. The man got to his feet slowly. She gestured toward the hole. He showed no emotion, but he kept his eyes on her.
The authorities are on their way.
Still no reaction on his face. Could he tell she was bluffing? A quick glance at the truck showed that the front tire that had been shot had not gone flat, and with luck, it wouldn't.
Sit.
Anya pulled up the rope ladder and practically cocooned him in it, tying him up. She made sure the knots were tight. He wouldn't be freeing himself. She used the cable from the winch to secure the men up top she'd subdued earlier. One of them started to come to.
Let's get some mug shots.
Anya went to the side of the trail where she'd dropped the net bag containing her digital camera. She came back to the cocooned man and wiped the blood away from his nose.
Say cheese.
Anya unwrapped her camera from the plastic.
Nuts.
She hadn't noticed it earlier, but the camera had been ruined sometime during her mad dash yesterday. A bullet was lodged near the lens, spiderweb cracks radiating from it. She tried to thumb it on just in case.
Nuts, nuts, nuts!
She made a move to heave it down the mountainside, but stopped herself. The memory card might be all right, meaning all the pictures she took yesterday could be saved. Or maybe someone could fix the camera. She wrapped the camera in the plastic and the net bag again, then climbed up to the truck, pleased to see her backpack sitting on the passenger seat. The door was dented and warped. So the man had driven the jeep out of the truck's way and had come back to take the truck, dropping her pack in it. Anya took out the keys she'd taken from the man in the cavern, and on her first guess found the one that fit in the ignition.
On second thought,
she left the truck running and slipped out, leaving the door open and marching straight to the man cocooned in the rope ladder.
Get up! Yeah.
Her muscles grew sore as she tugged him to his feet and shuffled him to the back of the truck. Opening the tailgate and lifting him inside was almost impossible, but Anya was nothing if not determined, and finally heaved him in. Then she climbed into the cab. Anya practiced with the clutch, gas, and brake pedals, which were stiff. She had to move the seat forward and adjust the rear view and side mirrors, all of which were covered with a dirty film.
Let's get out of here. But first, let's see where here is.
In her net bag was the map one of the villagers had drawn for her. Though pretty and well-rendered, it wasn't terribly useful. She leaned over and thumbed the glove box.
Ah, that's better.
Several maps were stuffed inside. She got lucky with the first one. It even had a faint blue circle drawn on it that she guessed approximated the location of the treasure cavern.
The lodge would be here.
She tapped her finger at a spot that didn't look terribly far away. That's where she intended to go first. She would see if Loire Tarot had made it back, and then head to the nearest city to contact the authorities. Likely the city she and Loire Tarot had taken the bus from to reach the lodge. Anya nudged her pack to the side and spread the map on the passenger seat and studied it. She reached for the backpack, unfastened it, and dipped inside. Her fingers found the dog tags immediately. The lid she'd padded with a piece of her pant leg was intact, but the skull itself was in four pieces. Her heart sank. Anya carefully backed down the trail. The truck was too wide to fit on it for most of the way, and so she took it over bushes and ferns, scraping against trees and trying to retrace the path it had taken to limit the damage to the foliage. In places, she followed deep ruts the truck had made when it came up when the ground was muddier. Finally, the rutted trail intersected something more nearly resembling a road, covered with gravel. Anya set off in the direction indicated on the map. Her fingers occasionally continued to rustle through the bag and over the skull segments, finding a bullet. Maybe the bowl had stopped a bullet that would otherwise have found her. The bowl could be repaired, but should it be? Though she'd seen many grisly archaeological finds through the years, this one particularly disturbed her. Maybe it was better off shattered. She punched the brake on a steep incline and felt the truck shimmy and slip and heard the cargo in the back shift. She wondered if her prisoner was being squished by crates and was mildly disappointed with herself for not stopping to check on him when the slope became gradual. Anya did, however, stop to look at the map. It was shiny with a thick, slick lamination and rendered in a combination of pleasing pale and bright colors. It was the sort of map bookstores displayed in their travel sections, not something a driver would pick up at a gas station or in a way stop. It included the topography of northern Thailand, listing the elevations of different sections of the mountain ranges, and the borders were dotted with pictures and interesting snippets of information about islands, beaches, temples, and the larger cities. Names and numbers at the bottom, on the opposite side, were probably towns and cities with their populations. The print was too small to read in this light. The reverse side also showed street maps of Chiang Mai and Bangkok. She flipped it back over to the side showing northern Thailand and the mountains. She'd save the map for Loire Tarot. He'd like it and might find something marked on it he'd like to see.
But no more spirit caves.
Anya touched her index finger to the tiny silhouette of an airplane. That was probably Mae Hong Son's airport, and Mae Hong Son was the closest city to her current location in the mountains. Plenty of roads were marked on the map, but there were no names that she could spot. One stretched up to Hue Pa, a town or a large village. That road cut around a hill and to Doi Pai Kit, another village. She recalled seeing a brochure for the area at the lodge, so if she found the road and made it through those villages, she'd find the lodge and could use the phone in the office to contact the authorities. She'd also look for Loire Tarot. Next would be Mae Hong Son and Chiang Mai. Outside of a thread-fine line that may or may not have been a road, The map didn't show a direct route from Meihong Sun to the larger city, but there were several routes that twisted and turned through the mountains and would eventually get her there, taking the scenic route, so to speak. She'd heard the men mention Chiang Mai. Anya's desire to finish the puzzle would lead her there.
And maybe lead to a nap first.
She rotated her shoulders against the seat back. God, but she was exhausted and achy. A brief nap would put her in a better mood and make her more alert. A bath was on her list, too. The mountain trail she'd backed down wasn't on the map, nor was the thin gravel road she found at the bottom. It wasn't really a road, either. It was a mountain bike path, and she saw deep ruts from the truck's tires, and maybe the jeeps before it, and a few small trees with badly scraped bark. The truck bounced along on it, able to turn around in an area of tall grass, so she was pointed south, in the direction she was heading. The seat was uncomfortable, the springs in it shot, and she had to stretch to reach the pedals. Although Anya was tall, she couldn't move the seat forward quite far enough. The mechanism was rusted. She figured the tall man she'd taken out first had been the driver. The steering wheel was caked with a dirty film, and the gear shift was likewise filthy. Clouds were increasing and the light was fading by the time she found a proper road, one with a sign that indicated Nam Pla National Park, Nam Pla Cave, and, to her relief, Meihong Sun.